Welcome into the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. Thank you so much for being with me this week. And momentarily, I'll bring in the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, as we do, well, almost every week. Want to get his thoughts on the Chargers, big move to Los Angeles, and a lot of head coaching news as the head coaching carousel is spinning very fast at this point. Four jobs have been sealed over this week and only two remain. So we'll get Hub's thoughts on all that and a busy week around the NFL. First, as I always do, a reminder to please head over to iTunes if you haven't done so already and subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast while you're over there. Make sure you leave us a rating, preferably a five-star one, and some comments would be great too, some shares. Let us know what we can do better, and we will try and do just that. Let us know what you enjoy as well, and we'll try and continue to do that. Again, this is the PFW Podcast, and it is sponsored by Loot Crate. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate brings you between 4 to 6 of the coolest curated mystery items every month straight to your doorstep. It's the best surprise you know is coming. Our next crate's theme is Origins. We have awesome and exclusive items from your old school favorites. This January, see where it all started and explore the iconic origins with historic items featuring Superman, Captain America, Mario, and my favorite as a kid, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, including, as always, our monthly t-shirt and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. All right, thank you once again to Loot Crate, and without further ado, I want to bring Hub Arkish on the program and see what's going on with him.
It's time now for The Way We Hear It.
There's a few things going on around the NFL, so maybe not much by you, but we've got a lot to get to. As we're reporting, the Rams have just announced the hiring of Sean McVay. That's the fourth head coaching vacancy to fill. It's probably not the biggest news to come out of California on Thursday, is it, Hub?
No, it's not. We've been waiting for almost a year now for the San Diego Chargers to decide what they were going to do as far as the new stadium and where their future home would be. And it was announced early on Thursday morning that they would be making a move to Los Angeles. Like everything else involving this story, nothing but strange since they made the announcement without formally contacting either the powers that be in Los Angeles, in San Diego, or the NFL league office. But we know that they had the permission to go. They had the guarantee that they could go join the Rams in the stadium that Stan Kroenke is building, and so that is where they're going. I find everything about it strange. The city of Los Angeles has proven in the past that it won't support two teams. It wouldn't even support one team. I've never really understood why Roger Goodell felt it was so important to get back to Los Angeles. The fact is that the TV market's ratings increased after the Rams and the Raiders left, but they have what they want. The NFL owners, Roger Goodell, they have a football palace being built in Los Angeles, and they now have two teams ready to play in it. The problem is that neither of those teams have much of a fan base in Los Angeles right now.
Yeah, that's certainly a problem, and correct me if I'm wrong, but to me it seems to be a problem that we're looking at potentially in the span of 24 months, three of the NFL's 32 teams relocating. Something looks wrong about that.
Well, it certainly looks wrong to the people in St. Louis and San Diego and possibly Oakland. We'll see what happens there. I know Mark Davis is trying to convince everybody that he's all set to go to Las Vegas and there's nothing to stop him. The fact is there's a lot that could stop that move before now and it actually happening, but let's assume that it does. It's not the look that the league wants. They understand that there certainly is a bad taste left in the mouth of important fans in St. Louis, San Diego, and Oakland. I think in particular in San Diego, they were not showing up to fill Qualcomm Stadium the last few years for the Chargers. And this idea that this is no big deal and loyal Charger fans will make the ride 2 hours up to 405 and then back again on Sunday is probably a bad assumption. And so, yes, you would think, and what's really interesting about it, Arthur, is that all three of these teams are paying somewhere between $500 million and $650 million each for the right to make these moves. And so the real bad luck on this is that all these loyal fans are being deserted and left behind with no concern whatsoever. And each NFL owner, by the time all three of these guys have paid up, is going to pocket about $50 million apiece for allowing them to make the moves.
Yeah, it's kind of disgusting, quite frankly. And I guess I'm probably looking at this too simplistically, but why couldn't Dean Spanos have saved that money for the relocation fee and received a loan from the NFL? I guess I just don't understand why that money wouldn't have been better spent finding a way to build his own place where he is going to retain a lot of the revenue versus being a tenant in Stan Kroenke's building. What's not adding up there for me?
Well, I agree that it's not adding up, but you're not being simplistic at all. You're looking at the facts that make no sense to a lot of people. He is spending $700 million to go rent space from Stan Kroenke. Now, he will be able to keep his ticket revenue. He will be able to sell PSLs, and he will share in the parking and the concessions from his games. But okay, my understanding is that any other events held there, those go to Kroenke. Kroenke owns the complex. Kroenke owns the office complex, the townhomes and condominiums that are being built around it. And so he's really not sharing in anything. He's just going there to rent. For the same $700 million, the city of San Diego made a last-minute pitch on a $1.2 billion stadium in the Mission Valley area, which is where Qualcomm is right now. Said they were prepared, the city, to come up with about $350 million. The league was supposed to come up with $200 million. And so you could argue that for the same $700 million, he could have gotten his own stadium built in San Diego that he would have had ownership in and could have brought events into and made a lot more money off of. So it's a tough one for everybody to figure out. There was no confidence that the city of San Diego would come up with even the much lower number of $350 million that they offered on this bill, as opposed to the almost three-quarters of a billion that the taxpayers were asked to vote on November 8th and overwhelmingly voted down. Only 43% of the people who voted supported it. Where the league is at in this is really tough for everybody to figure out. I know that Stan Kroenke, he's not happy. He wanted the Los Angeles market to himself. Now, the price of going there and getting his stadium built, which he will make an absolute fortune off of because of the real estate and the office buildings and the condos and all that and the theater that he's building, the price of that was he had to agree to allow another team to come. I guess the owners thought, because I suppose San Diego and Oakland are both in California, they hoped that that would be a reasonable compromise. It's not a compromise for anybody, except basically for Stan Kroenke, who had to agree to it. And it just leaves a lot of unhappy people in a lot of places. And the really interesting thing, though, is, again, the city of Los Angeles has proven in the past it will not support NFL franchises, certainly not two at a time. Well, now they're asked to support two new franchises. The Rams may have some history there, but they haven't been there in 25 years. And so it's not like there's a bunch of Ram fans just waiting for them to get back. And the Chargers haven't been there since they were founded there in the early 60s. So they have to build new fan bases. Clearly one of these teams is going to struggle, the one that isn't as good as the other. And so that's a very strange situation that the league has really created. As much as the NFL owners and Roger Goodell in particular claim they don't want to be deserting loyal fans, they've been pushing to get back to Los Angeles for 10 years now, something I've never understood. Well, they've got what they wanted. They just didn't get it exactly the way they wanted it. So now they've created a bunch of new problems.
It sounds like insanity, but I guess we'll have to wait and see how the story continues to unfold. Hub, did you hear anything? There was a finance and stadium committee meeting. It wasn't a full-out owners meeting in New York earlier this week, but my understanding is that Mark Davis actually made some additional inroads on his Vegas pitch, and that's getting closer to becoming a reality. Is that what you're hearing?
I've heard the same things you have. I don't know that to be true or not. I can't get into the heads of the individual owners. He still has two major hurdles to overcome. One is that while he has apparently gained the support, if not the blessing, of both Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft, right, that is a big deal, because generally when Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft both support something, it happens. The owners get the 24 votes that they need. But there are other hardline owners, and I'm told in particular Jerry Richardson in Carolina, Bob McNair in Houston, also very respected, much like Jones and Kraft, who are upset about this. They're saying, we have been lobbying against legalized gambling on football for as long as the league has existed. We spend a fortune to try and prevent it, and now all of a sudden we're going to put a team in Las Vegas where it is legal and going on every day. You know, supposedly the city has agreed not to take bets on Raiders games, but what about the other 15 NFL games every weekend? So there are owners, and we just don't know if there's enough of them to block the move. It would take nine who are very unhappy about the prospect of being complete hypocrites and going to Las Vegas. The bigger issue is that Mark Davis, much like Dean Spanos and the Chargers, has to come up with a relocation fee. His is going to be in the $575 to $600 million range, probably won't be quite as big as the Chargers because he's actually going to a smaller market as opposed to a bigger market. But at the end of the day, you've got to come up with it, and he has committed $350 million to Las Vegas to contribute to the stadium. According to what anybody knows, Mark Davis doesn't have $850 million. He is not allowed to borrow against his ownership in the team, his equity in the team, and so no one knows where that money is coming from. And then to further complicate things, the city of Las Vegas was able to commit to the $1.6 billion stadium they're talking about building with public funding and a $650 million contribution from Sheldon Adelson, the well-known Republican backer, casino magnate from Las Vegas, allegedly spent almost $100 million on the election of Donald Trump. The problem is that for that, Sheldon Adelson wants some stuff in return. Specifically, he wants a 20% stake in the team, which Davis has said he's not offering, and he wants control of the stadium. He wants to be the owner. He wants to be able to put the events and the shows in there outside of the Raiders games, and that is not the deal that Davis thought he was making. So there is still quite a bit to be worked out there, and I will tell you that Sheldon Adelson is someone who is more than capable of playing with, of competing with, of being in the same negotiating room with one of the 31 NFL owners. Mark Davis is not necessarily ready for that. And so how this one plays out is going to be very interesting too.
All right. Well, obviously a lot to wrap our heads around with teams coming and going. And again, it doesn't have a good feel to me, but you know, a lot, I guess, is left to be written with this story. Hub, these head coaching jobs are going fast now. We've got, as I mentioned, four already booked with the Jaguars, I believe, kicking it off with Doug Marrone, retaining him, removing the interim tag, and then the next dominoes to fall, of course, Sean McDermott going to Buffalo and Vance Joseph going to Denver. And then today, literally within the hour as we're taping, Sean McVay becomes the youngest coach in NFL history, inherits the youngest roster in the league for the past five seasons. Your general thoughts, does one of these jump out at you, either good or bad or surprising or all the above?
Well, none of them are surprising. They all jump out as having the potential to be more bad than good. But that said, I'm not ready to say that any of them are bad hires. I mean,
right,
these are good football coaches who are getting a chance. Doug Marrone in particular was a bit of a surprise hire in Buffalo back in 2013, and actually didn't do a bad job. Went, I believe, 7-9 his first year, and then 9-7 his second year, and then he resigned. He was not fired.
Right.
He was not happy with the situation when the Pegulas, Kim and Terry Pegula, mm-hmm, bought the team, so he resigned. He ended up the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville. He was the interim coach there. Some would argue that it makes sense. It makes no sense to me because, A, it's a double down on Blake Bortles, which I don't think you really had to do. But what is particularly puzzling about it is that while Marrone is keeping the head coaching job, David Caldwell was giving a contract extension as the general manager and then had his power cut and taken away from him when Tom Coughlin was brought in as the executive VP of football with authority and veto power over both Marrone and Caldwell. Now, here's what's wrong with that. Everybody who knows anything knows that what Coughlin really wanted to do was coach, not sit in the front office. He has no front office experience, and you now have him looming over the efforts of both Marrone and Caldwell. And what Shad Khan was thinking when he put this trio together is a bit of a mystery to pretty much everybody around the league. You know, you look at Sean McDermott, and he's qualified. He was a hot candidate last year and suffered for what some of the hot candidates this year are suffering from. He went to the Super Bowl, and teams weren't willing to wait.
Right.
Unfortunately, he's coming off a bad year in Carolina, and so that has some people puzzled. Vance Joseph, he has never been anything but a defensive backs coach. He has 1 year as a coordinator. That was in Miami. And this year they had the 30th ranked defense in total defense, 31st against the run, 18th in points allowed. You know, people are asking the question, why is Vance Joseph the best candidate for this job? Now, again, in fairness, John Elway likes him. He interviewed him 2 years ago before he hired Gary Kubiak. He is highly respected. He is a very bright guy. He's a great communicator. May prove to be a bit of an off the beaten path type choice that works out very well. But again, that clearly is prepared. That's top candidates at New England and Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia, even at Kansas City and Todd Haley. Pittsburgh and Todd Haley. Of course, he's a former head coach in Kansas City. Certainly, you look at Jim Bob Cooter and Terrell Austin in Detroit. You look at Kyle Shanahan, who's probably the most qualified candidate of all these guys out here. And in the case of the Steelers and Falcons and Patriots coaches, they're just not available right now. And so you've got these NFL owners acting like a bunch of kids in a game of musical chairs, and they're just grabbing a chair because they don't want to lose, and they're not going after the best prospect. Finally, we get to Sean McVay. Let youth be served. I think it's wonderful. He did a nice job with Kirk Cousins. This is a 30-year-old young man with nowhere near the experience one would want in a head coach in the National Football League. Clearly not as qualified as some of the other candidates who've been thrown about. And so it's a bit of a puzzle as to why some of these teams are doing this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's interesting that after Miami last season made Adam Gase the youngest head coach in the NFL at the age of 37, and Gase obviously had a ton of success and has already graduated a coordinator. I don't think people are talking about that enough, the fact that Vance Joseph worked for a year for Adam Gase before getting his own gig. But like you said, to go 7 years younger, and when you look at McVay's relatively bare resume, it is a little surprising. He does have coaching roots, of course, with Mike Shanahan in Washington, and spent a year with John Gruden in Tampa Bay. His father also spent more than two decades in the 49ers front office, so he has worked, or he has kind of been in the room or seen firsthand how those things operate as well. But I don't know, when you pair that young of a roster with that young of a coach, it seems like nothing if not a gamble. And I think, as you said at the top, Hub, these all feel like gambles. I think Buffalo maybe made the safest choice of all of them.
Well, I think of the four that we have so far, Sean McDermott is probably going to be the most respected pick amongst NFL insiders and analysts. Doug Marrone is a fine choice. Certainly you can make the argument that it makes sense. But the other two, the reaches that have been made here on Joseph and McVay, probably as much as anything because teams just aren't willing to wait until the Patriots or the Falcons or maybe the Steelers lose. And you know what? Patriots, you're almost looking at a guaranteed three-week wait, I should say. I don't know if they're going to win. I don't know if they're going to win the Super Bowl, but I'm going to be surprised if they don't get there. And I think even beyond that, you also know that with those two, with Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia, they won't take just any job. Even if a team waited, if it's not the right situation. As a matter of fact, you look at the Patriots. You got Nick Cesario there, who's one of the most respected general manager candidates in the NFL. 49ers asked for permission to interview him, and he said he wasn't interested in interviewing there. And Josh McDaniels has done the same thing with jobs in the past. So, there is that concern. But I will tell you what would be absolutely stunning to me would be if these six jobs all filled before Kyle Shanahan was available to interview and be ready to coach. Because to me, he was clearly the top prospect for one of these jobs when they all initially opened.
All right, Hub. And then lastly, there's a deafening silence in Indianapolis. And I'm just wondering if you think that could potentially turn into something other than Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano being back next season. Jim Irsay has not spoken with the media since the season ended. Just reports, one report I believe surfaced saying Chuck Pagano was safe. But for such a guy you can't get a read on in Jim Irsay, would you be stunned if there's still another big turn coming down the pike here, or you think those guys are safe?
I wouldn't be stunned by anything Jim Irsay does, but I do think they're safe. It may very well be as simple as Irsay did say about 3 or 4 weeks left in the season that he wasn't making any changes. I just feel he's already spoken. It would make no sense whatsoever if, in fact, you were going to make a change to sit here and wait and let all the competition get all the best people to interview and then take what's left. That is a goofy scenario, unless he is the one who's being smart saying the people he wants are still coaching and working with potential Super Bowl teams, and he's waiting to see after they lose what the competition is. But I don't think that's the case. Jimmy Irsay is a fascinating guy because it's hard not to be struck by his eccentricities. He's got some goofiness about him, but he is one of the two or three most successful owners in football over the last 20 years when it comes to wins and losses. And so I do think he knows what he's doing. And I do think he realizes that he made a pretty strong bet 1 year ago on both Pagano and Grigson, and not to give him at least one more year is probably forcing himself to lose his own bet when he doesn't necessarily have to.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, we've just talked about some interesting candidates that are still out there and could eventually, this cycle could complete without them finding new jobs. So that's one possibility. One other possibility, there are rumblings out there. Peyton Manning and John Gruden, two guys who are currently out of work, at least relative to the NFL. And I know Gruden's an analyst, but two more big names. If Jim Irsay was searching for one of those guys, we'll wait and see. It would certainly make for a great story. That's nothing we're hearing, just kind of rumblings. There have been some reports out there with those two names connected. Hub, enough of the hot seat discussion. I guess I'll just get your picks. I've already kept you too long. What game are you most excited for this weekend, and who do you like in these games?
Well, one quick thought, Arthur, on your last point. Indianapolis is not a market that screams for that big name. It is a concern in places like Los Angeles, possibly if you were going to a Las Vegas. But, again, I don't think it's the type of thing that's going to move Irsay. I think he might love the idea of bringing back Peyton Manning, maybe giving him a small piece of the team, which we know Peyton Manning would want and require to take the job. But, again, right. You're talking about somebody with no front office experience whatsoever, and nobody's talking about coaching. We know that's not what Manning's looking at. Most people still suspect he's got a future in a broadcast booth somewhere. Okay. The game I'm most looking forward to, the game I'll be working. I'll be doing the national radio call for Westwood One from the sidelines on the Chiefs-Pittsburgh game. It is a pick, so it probably sets up as the most competitive game of the weekend. You've got significant favorites in the other three. I can give you arguments on both sides of the game. I think there are some fascinating matchups. I expect it to be the most entertaining game of the weekend with one caveat. There are some significant weather concerns for this one. The weather shouldn't be terrible on the East Coast Saturday night in New England, and of course, the games in Atlanta and Dallas will be played indoors. They are saying 100% chance of precipitation in Kansas City. It could be anything from rain to freezing rain and sleet to snow. The way that these playmakers, I won't say too explosive offenses, obviously the Killer Bees and the Steelers are an explosive offense. That's the Chiefs have found some explosion in Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, but they still do like to grind it out on the ground as well with Spencer Ware and Kendrick West. They do get Jeremy Maclin back this weekend. The weather could be a limiting factor in that game, but if it is not, I expect it to be the most explosive and possibly the most competitive and most exciting of the four, and I don't have a clue. It's a coin toss to me. It's a pick 'em on the board. I can give you an argument for both teams, and generally when this happens, I see a lot of people leaning towards Pittsburgh because of what the Killer Bees have done in the situation. I lean towards the home team. They led the NFL in interceptions. They led the NFL in turnover takeaway ratio. And Ben Roethlisberger's been throwing picks the last few weeks. So I think it could come down to a late mistake. And I like the Chiefs' chances to get it done at home in a very close one.
All right, outstanding. And I'll tell you what, to see the rest of Hub's picks and my picks, you can either check out our other Pro Football Weekly podcast this week at profootballweekly.com. We also have our picks up there along with our previews of each game. Hub, I'm going to cut you loose, but thank you so much for all the great info today. And have fun out there at Arrowhead this weekend. And we'll talk to you next week on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.
All right, Arthur, we'll talk to you later.
That is Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly. And go check them out on the Westwood One sidelines this weekend at Arrowhead Stadium as well, doing the Steelers-Chiefs.
All right, and thank you again to Hub for taking time out of his busy day. I know he is running all over the place, and if it sounded like maybe he was running around outside, it kind of sounded like that briefly on my end. I do apologize for the technical difficulties, but I hope you were able to make out most or just about all of what Hub said. Some good info in there, and we got one of his picks, as I kind of teased during the podcast. If you want to get all of our picks, mine and Hub's, Kevin Fishbane's, head over to www.profootballweekly.com. We have previews of all four divisional round games along with our picks. You'll find the other Pro Football Weekly podcast this week where I went in depth with Ty Shalter, PFW contributor, breaking down all the games. And as usual, you're going to find everything you're looking for on, as far as the NFL is concerned, over at profootballweekly.com. One last reminder, you're going to find this podcast, if you happen to just stumble onto it today, you'll find it every week if you go to iTunes subscribe over there. And while you're there, leave us a rating and a comment if you would. That's going to do it for the second installment of this week's Pro Football Weekly podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. So appreciative, as always, that you are with us this week. And I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I have a feeling that these games are going to be a lot more competitive. They better be more competitive than the wild card weekend. But should be a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy it. I know I will enjoy being back here next week, breaking it all down. Same time, same place. Actually, it's anytime you want. It's a podcast. But certainly the same place on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Thank you again so much, and we'll talk to you next week.